In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, to hear the lamentation of the women.
And welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show, the champions, the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com, and now we're also podcasting at getthepointradio.com. I am Walter Duraglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your new gods.
Searching the worlds of comic books for the anti-life equation.
The anti-life equation.
Yes, and you know what? If we're going to be on a new podcast or a new radio show, you should really get the name right. Otherwise, it'll be all anti-life for the
right.
rest of our show.
I apologize to our new home, getthepointradio.com.
Wow, so apparently people like listening to what we talk about.
Apparently.
That's good. All right, and we're very, very honored this week to have our own very special guest. We've had him on before, and he was such a fantastic guest. The fans have demanded that he come back again. And we have Mr. Life Peng. He is one of the instructors at Hamilton Mohawk College, as well as a freelance illustrator himself. Life, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me back, guys.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you back here. And so Life, I can't do it justice, so very quickly, what are some of the various things? I know you worked on, like, PUD comics. Just so our listeners can get an idea of what kind of stuff you've done in the past, what have you worked on in the next, 10 seconds?
Sure. I did a lot of stuff for Pokemon. I've done a lot of stuff in advertising and package design. Chances are your listeners probably have something in the cupboard right now that I did the cartoon artwork for. Maybe a box of Turtles chocolates or some Nestle's Quick chocolate powder.
I love turtles.
So, yeah, that's been my business for the last 20 years or so.
So you're that guy that, like, nobody knows who did the artwork. But
that's
like,
right.
Like, you've seen it a million times.
Exactly.
Right, cool. I like it. All right.
Right. Now, you also did, I'm very familiar with this product, those the munchies, the chips,
I did
right?
the munchies, yeah. And for
the
people
Humpty
of a...
Dumpty, is it?
Those were Hostess potato chips.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry.
Hostess.
And
Hostess.
For people of a certain age, like my students at the college right now, when they were little, many of them had a box of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cereal.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's
right.
One of the ones that I
Very
did.
Very cool.
Yep. Along with Batman pasta, Sailor Moon pasta.
I didn't know they had Batman pasta.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Why don't we have that on the show?
They should be a sponsor.
I think so. Yeah.
Our producer Anthony Falcone is
he's missing the point here.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen. We're very happy to be on GetThePoint.com. Sorry, GetThePointRadio.com.
You know, we will get it right.
And they're a pop culture channel, and they have a lot of shows like ours, but just way better.
Apparently.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're better. No, nobody's better than us.
You know what? You have a
Come on
good
now.
Point. Now, Life. You remember from last time, what we're going to do now is we're going to go through the world of comic books. Today being Wednesday, today is the day that new comics hit the stands at local comic book shops. So people are running in, they're excited, they can't wait to get their new comics. And we're going to fill them in on everything that's happening new in the world of comic books and in the world of comic-related stuff.
Fantastic.
Comic-related stuff.
Right.
So, of course, we have new this week now.
Right.
And so, Life, we're going to ask you to read our sponsor for the new this week, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. The sponsor, new this week, is brought to you by Crazy Larry's Used Batmobile Emporium. Ever wonder what Batman does with his old models? He sells them to Crazy Larry's, who then sells them to you for unbelievable prices. Great gas mileage, six-star safety rating, and free bullet holes. Why not come on down and test drive one today?
Wow. Crazy Larry's.
You know, I love my cars with bullet holes.
Yeah, you know what?
Those are just, it's just, you get better mileage that way. They're speed holes.
Well, you know what? And you're absolutely right. And when it rains, there's natural drainage.
Exactly. So, see, there you go.
You got every, all the way around. Everything going for you.
That's right.
All right, Chris, what do we have for new this week? What have you picked?
Well, you know, as always, we've started this trend of starting with DC. And although it's not a DC New 52, which I was kind of surprised about, I thought we'd start with a DC as well. This is a Penguin, hold on, what's it called? Penguin Pain and Prejudice miniseries. One of five came out today.
Right. Now because this is October, the New 52 is done.
New 52 is over with. That's old news, man.
Old news.
If you want something new, go to Penguin Pain and Prejudice.
Right. So, hey, you know, Chris and I could have easily picked a number two of one of those 52.
It would have been so easy.
Right. But we didn't go there. We went with Penguin Pain and Prejudice.
That's right.
Now, this wasn't hyped. Like, this wasn't announced, trumpeted by DC that starting in month two, they're going to have a lot of miniseries and stuff like that.
No, you know, in
as
fact,
far as I know, it wasn't.
You know, I didn't even know about it until I saw it on the shelf today. You know, it looks kind of interesting, I got to say. But you know what? I can't say as I'm familiar with the creators. We got Greg Hurwitz and Simon Kudransky. The only guy I know is the colorist, and that's John Kalas, and he's been doing stuff coloring for a long, long time. But, you know, I don't know the creative team at all, but it looks pretty interesting. It looks like it's an all-painted kind of piece of comic, and it looks interesting. So now I'm confused, which I know doesn't take much.
Go ahead.
But I thought that DC was kind of like, okay, we've got our 52. This is it. Clearly, I'm wrong. They're going to be publishing all kinds of new miniseries and all kinds of different things now.
Which is good. I don't think they should be defined by the New 52. I think this cool little miniseries like this is great. Now, I'm going to have to go back into the solicits for next week and check out, because I'm sure there's going to be tons of these cool little miniseries.
Yeah, for sure.
I've always thought that the DC 52 was they're going to throw 52 things up against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be loyal to any of those titles for, say, past six issues,
right,
maybe.
Right.
And I don't think they're going to have any qualms about pulling whatever. Because, guys, what we found at our shop was that there were people, they were just compelled to take one of each for some reason. So
right.
Normal, sane human beings during the week. But come Wednesday, they're going, oh, I want one of each, right? Like, just no rhyme or reason to it.
But they want to try it out, right?
I don't know if it was try it out or not.
Or
I
speculate?
Think it was, yeah, collecting.
Right.
I think
right,
they wanted one of each for posterity or something.
But now's their chance, right?
Right.
You know, people had their chance back in the 60s. Now they have their chance to do it again, right?
Yeah, but I don't think.
Back in the 60s, guys, do I have to remind you of.
I meant for Marvel. I was thinking of Marvel Comics.
I was going to say, do I have to remind you of the Dazzler phenomenon? I think I still have seven copies of that comic.
Yeah.
You know what? This didn't just happen with Dazzler. That happened with a lot of different comics.
Yeah.
And I need to remind people of the Batman Legends of the Dark Knight comic, where there's four different color covers.
Oh, those glow in the dark.
Yeah.
Or X-Men, Jim Lee's X-Men.
Different covers.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think
I think I have a Superman at home that came in an opaque, sealed plastic bag that if you opened it, you destroyed the value. And I still have never seen that cover because I was afraid to open the plastic bag.
Well, clearly you're a very good speculator then.
Well, and also, I honestly don't believe you would have destroyed the value. Destroyed that much to begin with. So you're safe. You know, you get home tonight, like, you open that puppy.
Yeah. All right. Because Walt says so, I'm going to do
right.
that.
And you absolutely thank me for it, okay?
And then when you read it and cry because it wasn't nearly as good as you thought it would be.
Then you can send me a nasty email.
That's right.
All right.
Let's jump over to Marvel. So at your local comic book shop today, Penguin, Pain and Prejudice, Part 1 of 5. Marvel's got Hulk, number 42, Hulk of Arabia.
Yeah, you know, I picked that just because I love – okay, so last month we had Hulk versus Dracula, and
right.
Now we've got Hulk of Arabia. So I'm wondering, is the Hulk going to just go through all these different kind of pop culture niches and just kind of like, are we going to not only have, you know, Hulk of Arabia, are we going to have, you know, the Terminator Hulk?
Yeah.
Hulk and Juliet, exactly.
You never know. Now, I'm having a quick peruse, guys, through the thing, and spoiler alert.
Beep, beep, beep.
Spoiler, I do not see a magic carpet. Okay, so he's not riding any magic carpet.
That's a shame.
So I think they're trying to stay modern with this stuff. But listen, Hulk is one of those properties for Marvel that
just keeps on giving.
Yeah, but he's either hot or he's not.
Yeah, right. True enough.
And when he's not, it's like subsistence living by those core Hulk fans. But when he's hot, like I think the last time Hulk was really kind of hot was that World War Hulk, the Planet Hulk that went into World War Hulk and all that kind of stuff. And you know, he was one of, I think, top five for Marvel at the time. But he's faded away. Now, Marvel being the house that holds all these properties, they have to kind of, I guess, you know,
they got to keep him going.
Keep him going.
Yeah, but he never really faded too much from that whole World War Hulk thing. That this is sort of still on the trail end of that, because that's where the Red Hulk was introduced and all that kind of stuff. Right?
Oh, so, is that when he was introduced? Like, I thought maybe that Hulk of Arabia got a sunburn from being out in the desert.
No.
One might think so.
No.
One might think so. But
don't worry.
No.
The Green Hulk is coming back in Incredible Hulk number one, which is later this month. Incredible Hulk number one. So I think for a property that really isn't humming on all cylinders, I think Marvel's trying to put out three or so monthly titles, which seems counterintuitive, unless they've got something planned that we don't know about. Right?
Well, it is the Hulk, and let me ask you guys this,
because you're the experts, but do you think that this might be part of a strategy to just put enough books out there to compete with 52 DC?
That's
books?
Probably part of it.
52 Hulks!
Yeah.
If only.
New 52 Hulks.
I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is, you know, with the Avengers movie coming out next year, the Hulk is going to be in it, so they're trying to get as much hype around the Hulk character as
makes
they
sense.
Get,
yeah,
right? So,
makes sense.
All right.
Let's keep going here.
Keep it moving. Keep it moving. Stay on target.
So this is I picked this because it just looks so
terrible.
Yes. So normally we like to do one Marvel, one DC, and then one sort of alternative type comic.
Yes.
And so I chose War Goddess by what's it called?
Hold Mike on. Wolfer.
No, Boundless Books.
Boundless Comics.
It looks like the heroine on the cover in her bustier is almost boundless herself.
Yes.
The way she's almost popping out of her bustier there.
Careful, Chris.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Listen, she's very Wonder Womanish, Diana Prince.
She is. Yes.
So
yes.
That's.
There's an awful lot of blood on that cover if you look at the poor guys in the background, though.
Yeah, it's one of those covers where you kind of look at it, you know, you see this, you know, busty babe kind of thing, but then you look in the background, all of a sudden there's like missiles flying and people getting decapitated.
You know what? Now that I look, spoiler alert, now that I look and I see like entrails and guts of these two guys that kind of fell out of their cars, which really is not necessary for the context of what was happening, but I guess entrails sell.
Well, it's true. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you should say that, because just before the show, Life and I were talking about this book, and he looked at the back cover and he said, you know, it's got to be good when you see a guy standing holding somebody else's entrails in his hand.
You are right. There are it's an ad for Stitched, Garth Ennis, and there is a guy like entrails front and back.
Entrails galore. Yeah. If you like entrails,
this is your book.
This is your book. That's right.
All right, so War Goddess number two, Boundless Comics, Mike Wolfer, and maybe this isn't even a person's name, but Pau Rodericks.
That might be
a company.
I don't know.
Anyway, check that out at your local comic book shop today.
All right, and
finally, I hold in my hand the last comic. Chris and I like to every week now pick a comic for the kids and highlight a comic that parents listening to the show can head into the local comic book shop, pick up safely without worrying about entrails. and that is Scooby-Doo. Where Are You, number 14.
You know, Scooby-Doo is one of the... Did you ever work on anything Scooby-Doo-related life?
I never did, no.
No, I thought... He seems like the kind of character, the kind of property that you would work on. See, you've done Batman.
I'm really sorry that I never had a chance to work on Scooby-Doo, because I love Scooby-Doo.
I think you should work on something for Scooby-Doo.
I'm gonna work at working on Scooby-Doo.
Pretend like somebody's hired you and just do it yourself.
Yeah. All right, I might just do that.
Do a Scooby Snacks box design.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to run right out and do that after the show.
I bet you will.
That's after you read that Superman.
Yeah.
All right, so Scooby-Doo, Where Are You, number 14 from DC Comics, rated everyone. So check that out at your local comic book shop.
Awesome. Well, let's get into a little bit of a musical interlude now. And we have here, remember the old Swamp Thing cartoon? No, of course you don't. But I've got the soundtrack for it.
Swamp Thing. That's great. That was the Trogs.
Really?
Yeah.
Chris, I got to tell you, as I listened to that, visions of Adrian Barbeau danced in my head.
Oh, yes. Only, eh? If only. Yeah, I know. And do you remember she was replaced by a much lesser version of herself with Heather Locklear for the remake of Swamp Thing?
I did not remember that.
Yeah, they remade it, and they had Heather Locklear.
Guys, here's the saddest part of this whole conversation is Swamp Thing, the musical track, the TV show, and all we remember fondly is Adrian Barbeau. Right.
For many, well, a couple of reasons,
right.
Anyway.
Couple.
But you know what I love about that soundtrack there? Do you know how, of course, it's a ripoff of, you know.
The Trogs.
The Trogs.
Wild Thing.
And,
yeah.
And instead of saying, Wild Thing, I think I love you, it's Swamp Thing, Earth Needs You.
Right, yes. Yes. Perfect substitute.
Yes.
All right. Listen, that brings us, Chris, great, great segue, as always.
Yes.
You are a great segue-er into industry news.
Industry news, which, of course, is brought to you by...
Industry news is brought to you by Unnecessary Tie-In Books. Tired of reading a single, concise storyline? Have no fear, because Marvel and DC are offering Unnecessary Tie-In Books. Drag out a four-part story tenfold by purchasing books you don't really need. Unnecessary Tie-In Books, separating you from your money since 1985.
Nice.
Good.
Nice. That's probably about right.
So that is about right.
Yeah, and you know what? A great great day to advertise that, since people are running into the local shop looking for unnecessary tie-ins today. So that's good.
Right on.
All right. We're going to start industry news with a great piece of news. Paper Cuts has announced that they were awarded the license for the Three Stooges comic.
Yeah, this is
from
awesome.
C3 Entertainment.
Yeah, this is awesome. You know what? Just when you think a property is dead, like, I didn't think anybody cared about Three Stooges anymore, except for actually the three guys sitting around this table right now.
Suddenly,
you know, I just really didn't think anybody cared about it.
Whoa, Larry the Cheese!
You were wrong. Only two guys sitting around this table actually care.
I noticed he wasn't chiming in on the stupid Three Stooges imitations that you were just doing.
It wasn't just me. Anyways, yes, but I think it's great that, you know, obviously there are some nostalgic people out there who think that that a Three Stooges comic book will do well.
Yeah. Now, being the dad of a 12-year-old boy and a 10-year-old boy, I've started to introduce them to old Three Stooges. And I'm going to tell you straight that kids love it. I mean, afterwards, you had to tell the older one, "Yo, stop poking your brother's eyes out, for cripe's sakes. You're going to hurt him. It's only in the movies."
Yes.
But, you know, it's timeless, is my point.
It is.
Timeless. That slapstick, the stupidity, the thing is timeless. Of course, the news comes on the heels, not on the heels, coupled with the much-anticipated movie coming out next April 4th, the Three Stooges feature film.
Yes, which is... fantastic that they're actually redoing it with new actors, of course.
Now, what I don't know about the Three Stooges feature film, and Life, I'm not even going to look at you, because from the way you're looking at us talking about this material, you won't know this. But
I need a little convincing. That's
will
sure.
it be a period piece? Like, will it be a Depression era piece, or will they be modern?
Or will
Three
it be
Stooges?
Like modern guys? Yeah. I don't know. I know it's done by the Farrelly brothers, who have done a lot of great movies out there. But as far as, you know, period piece or something new, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't read up on it. You kind of surprised me with this piece today, so I don't really know much about it.
Right on. All right. So, Three Stooges comic. Talk to your local comic book dealer and make sure he adds it to your pulls.
Absolutely.
Right. All right, Chris, let's move on. Walking Dead.
Speaking of Three Stooges.
Yeah, the DVD releases this week for season one.
Yeah, this is great. Of course, you know, Halloween's coming up, so everybody's getting all into a spooky mood. And now we have the Walking Dead TV series season one coming on DVD, and which is going to be just ahead of the new series premiere on October 16th.
Right.
Of course, so you can watch all the first season and then get right up. Yeah,
get all pumped. Yeah,
I did watch the first season, and I think it was about six episodes long. Is
yeah,
that right?
It wasn't very long.
Now, did you enjoy it?
Oh, I did enjoy it. A six-episode season is really short,
opinion. Now you can buy it for only $50.
Wow.
Or on Blu-ray for $60.
Or you can just sit there and try to remember real hard.
You know what,
it's way cheaper.
You know what's funny is, okay, so reading this little blurb here, it says it's a three-disc set.
Wow. There's got to be a lot of background material.
A lot of background stuff. Yeah. For something that's going to cost, you know, almost
$50. I think I'm hoping at least one disc is nothing but bloopers.
Yes.
Zombie bloopers.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be cool. I agree.
Yeah. So, hold on. They were 1 hour long, right, the shows?
Yes.
They're 1 hour long?
Well, an hour of TV time, so whatever that was, like 45 minutes or 40
okay,
minutes,
right.
Whatever that is.
So, one DVD should cover all six, no problem. Right?
I would think,
You would think, but this is three DVDs, so it must be lots of, as Life said, a lot of extra stuff.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of bloopers.
Well, I mean, like you said, Chris, they timed it well. Halloween, a week or 2 weeks or so before the release of the new thing.
Yeah.
Now, I think they went with six originally because AMC wasn't sure of the property.
And I think you're right about that.
And they realized right away that, boy, we should have gambled on this because
season is going to be 13 episodes.
Oh, fantastic.
Right.
Yeah, so...
All right.
So you get a lot more zombies for your dollar.
Way more entrails.
Yeah.
Entrails.
Absolutely.
This is going to be the theme of today's show.
The theme of today's show is entrails. All right. Let's talk about.
Speaking of entrails.
Yes. Let's talk about The Watchmen selling for $9.99. The Watchmen graphic novel, the largest selling graphic novel in the history of comics, has been picked up by Kindle. Which is Amazon's reader, electronic pad or whatever it is.
Yep.
And the color version, they're going to sell Watchmen for $9.99.
So this is crazy. So I realize that Amazon is trying to get into, obviously not just trying, but getting into the Kindle and, you know, doing all the e-readers and all that kind of
competing
stuff.
Competing with the iPad
and whatever BlackBerry has. But, you know, this is interesting because this is the first time a graphic novel has really been pushed hard for one of these electronic reader type things. And to have a starting price at $10 for the greatest selling graphic novel of all time is fantastic. I don't know what that means for the industry, but I think it's a great way to get people to jump on to comic books.
Right. Well, hopefully it works out that way. Now, there may be a backlash. If you guys quickly remember, a couple of years back, Amazon did this with they announced that all hardcover books were going to sell on the Kindle at $9.99.
Right.
And then it was right around this time, so the Christmas rush. So Walmart and Target, I believe, matched $9.99 for the hard copies of the books.
Right, for the ones you hold in your hand.
And so all three were being sold as loss leaders. They were losing money. And so I think the Independent Booksellers of America or something, an organization of small booksellers,
right.
went to the U.S. government to try to stop this predatory pricing and thing. And I believe they had to some extent scale back. As well, the publisher Macmillan fought Amazon and said, hey, you can't sell our books at $9.99 because we're selling them to you for $12.99.
Right.
And which Amazon said, well, we're not selling any of your books, so huh. And though later on, Amazon gave in and they allowed Macmillan to set prices. Now, my question to you guys here is, first of all, unfortunately, local comic shops do not have a local comic shop organization of America. We don't have a collective voice like the small booksellers do. Will who's going to speak for us? Is DC going to be the McMillan? And they are they going to step up and say, hey, that's predatory pricing, Amazon, for this book, since we're selling it to you, because nobody knows what. Let's say we're selling it to you for $9.99 digitally.
Right.
So why are you selling it to everybody else for $9.99? Like, is this going to happen? Is this dangerous to brick and mortar shops?
Right. Well,
I don't know.
I mean, my first question would be, are they selling it? Kindle paying $9.99 for this thing, or are they paying 50 cents? Because it's just a digital thing, right? Like, it's not actually material. There's no paper involved. It's just like bits and terabytes and stuff like that, right? So, are they actually paying $9.99, or are they paying 50 cents?
Well, they wouldn't be able to. I mean, as far all I can tell you is that DC with their 52 launch,
yeah,
they went same date digital. Okay, and they protected every single one of the comics at the same price.
Okay,
and they did that specifically to protect brick and mortar shops. So I can't see DC giving away their property that's such a hot seller to a large distributor for 50 cents.
You know what? My question would be, Walt, is this just an introductory offer to try and spur interest in purchasing digital graphic novels, and then maybe the prices will go up in the future gradually through Amazon? Or is this Amazon saying, this is going to be our graphic novel policy? Graphic novels, no matter what, will always be $9.99. Because if it's just a way of introducing the graphic novel concept to their e-reader customers, then maybe it's not such a bad thing. Maybe it's just something that will increase the overall interest in purchasing digital versions of graphic novels for the entire market, the small retailer and the large retailer market.
Good point. I think that, I'm one of the guys that believes that if because comics per se right now, the best-selling comics, these 52 things aside, the best-selling comics were in the low 100,000 print runs, the best-selling ones. If you can get through these e-readers, if you can get a million people reading a comic or a graphic novel online, a million different people, I honestly think that will help brick and mortar comic shops.
I agree. Right. Yeah,
right?
I agree.
So, and but the thing is, I'd be interested to know, why would Amazon sell at the purchase point for everything? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, and why would DC discount that property so? An online retailer can discount so heavily that it would hurt brick and mortar comic shops. That doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a good business model.
I think Life's got really hit. Perhaps has hit on something here, that maybe it's just a chance for people to kind of attempt the graphic novel on this e-reader type format, which maybe people aren't quite used to. They're sort of getting used to using their Kindles for novels, but maybe not for graphic novels yet. And maybe this is just something like, hey, I've heard this Watchmen thing's pretty good, and for $10, I'll give it a shot.
Right.
Right. You know, and then maybe it'll be like, maybe that'll be like the only one that'll ever come out at $9.99. Maybe if you want to buy The Dark Knight, that's going to be $24. Or if you want to buy, Killing Joke, that's going to be $15 or whatever. Right.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
We'll see.
Yeah. All right.
It bears watching, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
See what you did there? Watching The Watchmen.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, tough call.
All right, let's move it along. Chris, I'm reading this, and it's Entertainment Weekly covers the Avengers. I'm reading this, it says the upcoming Avengers movie is previewed in the cover story of the weekend's issue of Entertainment Weekly.
Right.
And the first thought, and this was on a comic news website. I think it was on ICV2. It might have been Bleeding Cool, but I think it was on ICV2.
Right.
And the first thought was, who cares?
Right. 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 I agree. I agree with what you're saying.
I think that we belittle ourselves, or we don't as a pop culture, comic culture society, don't take ourselves seriously enough when we get excited that Entertainment Weekly is picking us our story about comic books up. I think we're well past that point. I think Entertainment Weekly has to pick our stories up because we're important.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, for sure. Especially when you consider the scope of Comic-Con these days. it has clearly demonstrated that comics have gone completely mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact, which is great, I guess my point here on this story was, it's great that Entertainment Weekly picked it up. It's going to help the movie and everything like that. I just don't see a comic news site making that news that some sort of but what do you call those? Not mainstream.
Oh.
Mainstream news media picked it up.
Right.
I think we're well past that, and I don't think we should be reading stories like, hey, oh my God, Time, New York Times picked up our story about whatever. Sure,
yeah. Look, like, we got noticed.
Yeah, we got noticed.
We should be beyond that.
Yeah, we should be beyond that.
And you know, I agree, but you know what? A few different thoughts hit my head when you were talking about this. The first one is, of course, why? Like, why did Entertainment do this? Well, because as you said, who cares,
mm-hmm.
right? Because really, and that's the second point, is that people in the comic industry, they already know all this stuff, right? So what's the big deal? But the third point is that for Entertainment Weekly to be doing all this stuff, clearly it is becoming news. For people that aren't in the comic book industry, I mean, you know, as much as we like to think that we're not so insular anymore, we are kind of still insular in what we're doing and what we're talking about. But with the mainstream movies coming out, it's getting better. It's not great,
right.
But it is getting better. But there's still a lot of people who are just finding out about, you know, Captain America, and just finding out about Spider-Man, and when they have a new Fantastic Four movie, they'll find out about that. Like, you know, it's still coming out. So this is still fairly new for those kind of people, right? Don't you think?
Well,
I think for a lot of people it is. And,
You know what's interesting about that, Chris, to me, is how successful Marvel has been putting out their second tier characters to a mainstream audience.
Yeah.
You know, Iron Man, you know, Ghost Rider.
Thor.
Thor. Like, I mean, who would have thought that you could sell a lot of these largely unknown characters, unknown by the mainstream characters,
totally, right,
to a mainstream audience?
Yeah, I agree. And my last point about what I was saying earlier is that we're so inundated with news and media and everything. A magazine like Entertainment Weekly is just dying for any kind of material on anything, really.
Right.
So they've just got nothing else. I mean, maybe Britney Spears didn't have a meltdown that week, right? So they have to, let's report on the Avengers.
Plus, you just can't deny that comic book movies make money. They're huge.
Absolutely.
They're blockbusters. So that makes them mainstream right off the bat.
Yeah.
All right.
For sure.
Related story. This is cool. I thought this was great. And we're really on the same subject is Chevrolet announces they are the vehicle sponsor for the New York City Comic Con. So they're going to have a big display there. They're going to have this new car there called the Sonic.
You're right, the Sonic.
Yeah, the Chevrolet Sonic, the 2012 Sonic. And they're talking to a Chevy marketing exec, and he says, we're trying to market the Sonic to early adapters, the people that are willing to try new things, trendsetters, and what better place to find them than at a big Comic-Con.
Yeah, but I find it interesting, though, that they're sponsoring a comic book related event. This is definitely a first, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. In that way,
I can't think of any other event or thing that, I mean, besides your ads in comic books, I can't think of anything else this big that was sponsored by them.
It's a natural progression in what you've been seeing with San Diego, with even Fan Expo in Canada, and with the New York one, and C2E2 in Chicago. As say 7-8 years ago, you basically were lucky to get Marvel and DC as the sponsor booths, right? Maybe IDW, maybe Dark Horse.
Yep.
It was comic related stuff, and then some savvy people like Nintendo, Sony.
Yep.
They go, hey, let's get a booth and show off our PSP, because all these people are walking by, and then they're obviously into gaming and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the corporate booths at comic cons over the last couple of years have been starting to get crowded with non-comic stuff.
Exploding with non-comic stuff.
And so GM jumping in and saying, hey, you know, we're going to take it the whole way.
But
let's, you know, we're going to market a car for young people.
But don't you think this just kind of reeks of, like, you know, when a dealer will drive their car into a mall and, like, hey, what do you think of our new car? Like, are people really going to care? Like, if I'm there to go buy comic books, am I really going to look at a car and say, "Hey, oh wow, you know, I was going to buy this amazing fantasy number, you know, 15, but you know what, I'll get this Sonic instead.
Here's my $20,000 for this car.
Yeah. Who needs a comic when I can buy a car?
Right. Yeah. And can we take layaway? Or can I drive it home and pay you later, like
Mom!
comic guys do. Mom, can I have this new car? I disagree with you, Chris. I at cons, there's a lot of young couples walking around. You know, a lot of young couples walking around. They're there because, you know, he's buying something or she's buying something. But, you know, they also are living life and of other necessities and stuff
Hold on. Are you trying to tell me that comic book collectors have a life?
Well, not so the collectors. No, those guys are buried their heads in the bins.
Oh, but people that just happen to be there.
People that kind of are going there to be entertained.
And they have a couple, so clearly they've formed a relationship of some sort. Okay,
right.
All right,
fair enough. And
right.
They may be interested in this car. But it's interesting, though, that obviously some suit and tie at Chevy decided that, hey, this is a good place to market a car.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you, Walt. And I think it's not so much about going there maybe with a lot of money in your pocket looking for a rare comic and then changing your mind and buying a car instead. I think what it really is about is just brand awareness. You know, they've decided to make a move to say the kind of people who go to these cons are the people we think are interested in our car, and we just want them to be aware of our brand. And this is a place where we can capture their attention, even if it's just for a few moments.
You know, I'm going to go on a limb here and say, you know, the only thing that could possibly top all this is if Sonic the Hedgehog from Sega was also there next to Sonic the car.
Yeah, and if he had a sledgehammer and he smashed the crap out of the car,
that would be awesome.
Now,
what would be even awesomer, more awesome,
yeah,
is if for some reason Sony owns Sega, help me out. Let's pretend that they do. Okay, Sega.
Yeah.
By some chance, Sega's booth happened to be beside the GM booth, you know,
like
a pre-planned thing. Yeah, yeah. So you had Sonic the Hedgehog, and then you had the Sonic, and there was like a tense silence between the two.
You know, if this show was in Detroit and they had all those like ex-porn stars, they could have like that Ron Jeremy guy who was nicknamed the Hedgehog,
right?
And then he could be next to the car as well,
right? Yeah. And you could have Sega next to Seika.
That's right. Okay,
you know, and if this show was any good, we would have been past this topic 5 minutes ago.
Just keeps on going further.
Right.
All right.
You know, that's trying to see, like, what that there was, we were trying to get a lot of mileage out of that story.
Yeah, because we are talking about cars.
Right.
Yeah.
And
all
that's
right.
All.
He's picking up.
He's
picking up.
He's good,
on.
Eh?
Yeah. All right. All right, do we want to keep talking? Yeah, I guess so.
One more.
All right, let's talk about, just quickly, it has been announced that DC's 52 sold out all 52 issues. We're sold out to the comic shops.
Right.
And that all 52 issues are going to second print, some are going to third, and I think a couple are going to 18th print.
That's awesome.
Or something like that. So kudos to DC for the massive, massive success of this new 52.
Now I got to ask Life, do you buy weekly comics anymore? Are you aware of this whole new 52 thing?
I'm aware of it, but no, I don't buy weekly comics anymore. No.
Okay, so like in your opinion, I mean, if you had heard about this, obviously it's been a success. We know that already. But before this all happened, if you'd heard that this company was doing this, do you think it would have been a success?
Wow, that's a tough question because I don't really have my finger on the pulse of the typical comic purchaser these days.
Right.
But I would say that having followed this news online, I came across an interesting blog post from the legendary Jim Shooter and he was commenting on this phenomenon, and you can take or leave Jim Shooter to, you know, there's a lot of opinion about him. He's a real character now in the business, and a lot of people don't take him very seriously, but one opinion that he expressed in his blog post that I thought was pretty interesting. He said that, you know, this was being positioned sort of as an entry point for new readers.
Right.
And he found that the one flaw in that strategy was that every issue you put out should be a new entry point for new readers.
Good point.
So, you know, you can take that opinion or leave it, depending on how you feel about Jim Shooter.
Well, you know what? Obviously, Jim Shooter is, you know, a guy that's been around for so long, clearly knows a little bit, little something about, you know, comics and writing and that kind of thing.
Well, he's the architect of Secret Wars, which basically started the whole phenomenon we talked about earlier, the tie-in.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's also bought comics at the Bigby Comics booth before.
Has he really?
A couple cons.
Yeah. Wow. Brush with greatness.
Yeah. I didn't give him a deal, though.
Now, sometimes I get these guys mixed up, so I might be wrong. It's either Jim Shooter or Jim Starlin, who actually started writing comics at the age of like 15.
Yeah, that's
like
Jim Shooter.
It is Jim Shooter. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought it was Jim Shooter. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, he started. He started, I think, as an intern at DC.
Yeah.
And then gradually
like
moved over to Marvel.
He wrote Legion of the Superheroes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a kid, a teenager.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Incredible. But I like you said though. I don't know though. I mean, every comic should be a jump on. But.
Sorry to interrupt, Walt, but I think what he's getting at is that too often I think the general public's perception is that the comic book world, the storyline, is not – it's impenetrable to the casual reader. People are sometimes, I think, afraid to try to walk in and say, can I pick up this issue 357 of – whatever,
and
know what's going on, and be able to get something from you know picking up the story here.
All right, yeah, but good point because I mean I have two points on that. Is one, me personally, I never read DC because I thought, how the heck am I gonna? Where do I start?
Yeah.
These have been around since the 40s.
Yeah, like where do I? How do I? You know, I won't get the inside jokes. I don't know all the back characters that are going to keep popping in and all this kind of stuff. Say, like from the Green Lantern and stuff like that. But number two, though, and here's a good question. And obviously, the DC 52 hype has been helping sell the comics. But will it achieve the goal it wants to achieve? And I think what's going to hurt it against that goal is that I don't think people like the layman out there are going to buy into the fact that, you know, the slate has been wiped clean, people. There are no heroes before this point.
Right.
And, you know, read them. I think people's perception is still, you know, like Green Lantern. What do I know about Green Lantern? They're not convinced that it's like a brand new day type of thing. They still think that, like I just can't jump in here and start from scratch. Yeah. I obviously have to know something about the past. But this is where DC hasn't, I don't think, done a good enough job to the person on the street saying, you know what, nothing matters from the past. This is just, you know, ground zero type of thing.
Yeah, sort of related to that, Walt. Again, I didn't follow this closely, but I think I read something that they actually ended up DC ended up hiring Nielsen's to do a whole bunch of research into just who was buying the new 52.
Right.
Is
right.
that right?
Right.
Yeah. So I guess maybe we'll see all that info come out in the next few months.
But, you know, you bring up a good point. And I never really thought about this before. But, you know, comic books, they don't advertise anywhere else but in comic books. So it's so hard for the comic book industry to get new readership in any way other than through other media, like video games and movies. Obviously, their properties are being made into movies and video games, but they're not really advertising. Like, you don't see ads for comic books on television, right? You don't,
In People Magazine.
Or in People Magazine, yeah. So how does a comic book industry get new readership?
Mm-hmm.
And how do they say, like, hey, look, you know what? If you ever liked Batman, now is the time to jump on because you can start at number one and you won't have to worry about any of the backstory.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, how could DC?
How'd they get the word out?
Yeah.
You know what?
I agree they dropped the ball, but how could they have done it?
Every single licensed product should come with a stipulation from DC that they have a tag saying, hey, check out our comic books. As you pry open those pajamas.
Yeah, that's true.
And say, hey, yeah, check out our comic books or have a new comic.
Well, and you know what? You're right, because the thing is, this is not an independent, isolated company anymore. They're part of a huge entertainment conglomerate, so they should have access to all kinds of products that they could tie in with and do something like that promo tag that you're talking about.
Absolutely right.
Well, speaking of tie-ins, how about we have remember that old TV show, The Green Hornet? Well, I happen to have the soundtrack to that one. Let's give it a listen here.
Another challenge for the Green Hornet. His aide, Kato, and their rolling arsenal, the Black Beauty. On police records, a wanted criminal, the Green Hornet is really Britt Reed, owner-publisher of the Daily Sentinel. His dual identity known only to his secretary and to the district attorney. And now, to protect the rights and lives of decent citizens, rides the Green Hornet.
Yeah, that's a lot of coffee, Chris, right there.
You know, have you ever needed any kind of stimulation? Just listen to that song
right there, Chris. As we were moving on, this next segment of our show, the second part of industry news, it actually has a sponsor.
Yes, it does.
Yes, and speaking of stimulation, our next segment is brought to you by Penthouse Comics. Penthouse Comics, working hard to be even raunchier than the DC line.
Ouch.
Good for them. That's going to be a tough thing to do, though, for Penthouse.
Yeah, really. It really is. They're going to have to
get can't outsex DC anymore.
No, not anymore. No. Maybe back in the day.
Yeah. Hey, listen, let's talk about Marvel. Let's talk about Point One. Let's talk about Foundation.
Yeah, so Foundation seems to be this...
Point One
is the foundation of 2012. And it seems like Marvel is coming out with... is starting to come out with this series where it's going to be a jumping on point, and it's going to be, you know... as it's said in my little blurb here, it says, the return of fan-demanded characters. Now, I don't really know exactly what that means.
The return... Well, so what were they doing up till now?
I don't know.
Fan-not-demanded characters?
So, and which characters are we talking about here? I mean...
I don't know.
Is it Spider-Man? Because, gosh, I really hope Spider-Man returns, because I don't have enough of him.
Yeah, there's no fan demand.
No, there's no fan demand there.
Well, so, I don't know. You're right. It's a 64-page one-shot. And it sets the stage for the biggest stories of 2012. So
it seems to me, I could be wrong, and I've been known to be wrong before, but it seems to me like they're trying to attempt some sort of their own DC New 52 thing here, but in a different type of, you know, convoluted Marvel way, right? Like, they can never just be as simple as DC, where they just go, okay, we're going to wipe the slate clean. Now, you know,
that Marvel would be copying.
Yeah, but you know what? So what?
Yeah,
you know, it makes things so much easier. You know what? Why can't Marvel just do that instead of, oh, well, now we're going to have Foundation. And then in order to understand Foundation, you're going to have to get these 45 other tie-ins.
Sure,
those tie-ins again.
Exactly. Yeah, really. Like, I don't know. I'm just the only thing I'm going to say, it does have a great lineup of creators. It's got Jeff Loeb, Brian Michael Bendis, Matt Fraction, Ed Brubaker, Terry Dodson, Brian Hitch, Ed McGuinness, you know, David Lapham. Javier Pulido, Roberto De La Torre, you know,
Fred Van Lint.
Yeah, the name goes on and on and on, right? So there's lots of great stuff, lots of great creators in this, so I'm sure it'll be good, but I just think it seems like it's too little too late.
Well, yeah, okay, but, you know, see, 2012, okay, the DC's going to have their fun right now. They're having their fun right now. What Marvel is doing is I guess what they're doing is using this book to kind of announce the direction that their lines will take in 2012. So, like you say, wiping the slate. Like, Marvel wipes the slate clean every 7 months with flipping titles like Captain America and Thor and whatever, right? Yeah. You know, like, but Incredible Hulk number one this month.
But
you know?
They never do a broad sweeping change, like just like DC's doing, right?
But you see, I don't know, is Marvel's continuity – as messed up as DC's continuity was?
Absolutely.
Okay, so they need a wipe slate clean?
Maybe not so much that there's, like, you know, different worlds like DC had, but man, like, you try picking up an X-Men comic and trying to figure out where characters came from and who's related to who and all that kind of stuff now, and any kind of backstory, there's too much going on. Like, it's better to just wipe the slate clean.
Right. So, Marvel, listen to Chris. Too much going on, not enough sex going on.
Wait, whoa. I didn't say that, but it didn't not say that.
Right, exactly. Right. Very important. All right. Check out Point One, or head to your local comic book shop.
And ask
talk to the
shopkeep
and make sure he puts that down on your pull so you don't want to miss it. All right, this is a great story.
Yeah, I love this one.
So, what do these letters stand for?
The CBLDF, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.
Right.
So do you remember? Oftentimes on this show, we've talked about the history of comics and the Comics Code Authority, which sort of stopped all kinds of racy and horrific and otherwise tantalizing comic books back in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they basically, any comic book publisher wanted, if they wanted to publish a comic that would be sold on a regular newsstand, they had to go through the Comics Code Authority. Well, this Comics Code Authority, which started in 1956, ended a few years ago. Basically, DC dropped it, Marvel dropped it, and Archie dropped it. So basically, there's no reason to have this Comics Code Authority around anymore. Well, so now a little backstory. So the CBLDF, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, was an organization set up for retailers to help whenever the odd time you get a retailer who would sell a comic that's maybe a little too racy or has some bad language or bad visuals in it, and so they would get sued. Or
by bad, you mean good?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. But they'd get sued or they'd get arrested or something. So the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund would come in and help them out with their lawyer fees and with their any kind of
protect their First Amendment rights
exactly.
in the United States. Right.
So now. Because the Comics Code Authority hasn't been used in years, now all of a sudden we have the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund actually buys the copyrights to the Comics Code Authority.
Right. So this is great because I'm reading now that Comics Code, that stamp
the stamp
that was
of approval.
On all stamp
yep.
of approval.
Yep.
So the Legal Defense Fund has the rights to this. So they're going to now they announced that they're going to sell T-shirts of the Comics Code Authority. And collect the money and use it to defend, porn.
Which is hilarious because they were sort of – the CBLDF was going against the Comics Code
right.
stuff. And now they've bought it up and now they're going to sell it to make money.
Isn't it ironic?
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do think.
That's great. So somebody is Wortham, right? He's turning in his grave, right?
Yeah, Frederick Wortham.
Yeah.
He's spinning.
He's spinning in his grave. Yes.
Spinning in his grave.
Yes.
I think that's great. I will buy one for sure.
All right, I think Chris, we're going to get to life next.
Yes,
and so do we want a musical?
No,
segment?
No. Let's just go right into life.
Let's go right into life. It's all about life.
That's right.
It's all about life. Okay, life. Sorry. Our segue into life isn't as smooth as I wanted it to be, but that's okay. That's what the show's all about.
We're running out of time.
Lack of smooth.
Yes.
So again. Welcome. Thank you for sitting in with us this week.
My pleasure.
All right. And first, I wanted to talk to you about your post at Mohawk College, that the program that you're involved in. Can you give us a little rundown on that?
Sure. Yeah. It's a graphic design program with a strong emphasis on drawing. So we get a lot of students, especially from what is broadly called our catchment area, Hamilton and the surrounding communities, mostly leaning out towards Oakville in one direction and going as far to the southwest as Brantford and beyond and so on, all those communities, and heading out towards Niagara, all that region out towards Lake Erie. It's amazing, actually. Today I was talking to some of my students who travel an hour or so from some of the smaller communities around Hamilton because they have an interest in studying art. They want to make a career out of art. So we get a pretty diverse crowd. And I guess related to what we're doing here with the show, we get a lot of people with a really strong interest in pursuing something related to comics, animation, manga, anime, all the different elements that are part of this sort of broad scope of popular culture. And we try to give them a good, solid education so that they can go out and make a living doing something creative, something artistic, something in terms of commercial art, I guess you would say.
Right. Now, you were mentioning to me before the show that the Mohawk program has moved to a point where next year you guys are going to have to actually start viewing portfolios and stuff.
That's
like
the
that.
Plan.
Like,
yeah.
Up till now, it was, yeah.
Up
yeah,
until
yeah,
now, yeah. Up until now, anybody, we're, yeah. yeah, that's right. Like a lot of colleges, we had our graphic arts, our graphic design program, and pretty much every college in Ontario has one. But there were a couple of colleges that were the heavy hitters in that area.
Like
Sheridan College. Ontario College of Art and Design, and the rest of us, I suppose, you know, not to be disparaging, but we're kind of the also-rans. If you couldn't get into one of those heavy hitter colleges for graphic arts, then you might end up coming to us. Now, with some of the changes we've been making to the program, we are virtually oversubscribed in every one of our programs. We have an animation program now as well that is pretty much oversubscribed. So next year we'll be very likely moving to a model that will make it a little bit harder to get in. We're really looking for the people who are really serious about the graphic arts, who really have the at least foundation skills that we're looking for. So yeah, portfolio will become part of the entry requirement very likely by next year.
Now, do you think that, I know you, I teach at Mohawk as well. And, but just out of curiosity, now we used to be at the Brantford campus.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that the move to the Hamilton campus has made a big change?
It's made a big change. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. talking to people in recruiting, they're saying they had in past years a lot of interest, a lot of inquiries. And then when they were told, well, it's out in Brantford at the satellite campus, it was often a case of, oh, well, never mind.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So,
well, which is understandable. When you go off to college, you want to be part of college life, and
right.
You know, the Brantford campus, as great as it is, it didn't have the same feel as the main campus would have, right?
Right.
You know, with all the functions going on and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the college has been great. They've welcomed us back to this main campus by totally renovating a whole wing of the college
just
and devoting it to us.
Good for you.
So we've got brand new facilities, brand new equipment, a lot of exciting new programming, and there's a great energy in there. And what's really nice is we're seeing the students spend a lot of their time, even when they're not in class, hanging out in our department because they want to be there.
Yeah, it's a place full of creative people.
Exactly.
And they're,
yeah.
There's
a good energy.
Soaking
there.
Up the energy.
Yeah.
Now, how about other like institutions like on the colleges like Sheridan, OCA, Ontario College of Art? How about places like the Joe Kubert School? Does that compete with you guys, or is that more of like a comic drawing course?
I think so, yeah. I think it is more specifically for the artists who are really targeting their skills towards comics. And you know what's interesting, Walt, is that now I find a lot of the young students aren't necessarily looking for a career specifically in comics. They're looking at the larger world of sequential art. And that means a lot of them are interested in learning, for instance, storyboarding. So that has become a big component of what we try to teach them as well.
Right.
And concept art in general, you know, artwork that conceptualizes video games, animation, feature films, and comics, and you know, it's a huge broad spectrum of graphic arts.
Right. So the students that are coming in, and you know, because maybe I'm old school and stuff, I'm a little older. The students that are coming in, they don't have that notion that I guess what you guys are trying to say is you know, these people are going to generally have to work for themselves,
that's
won't
right.
they? Initially,
oh,
and you're preparing them for that. It's not like, yeah,
absolutely.
Learn to draw, get a job at Marvel. Learn to draw, get a job at Disney. This isn't about that, right? This is
you know
learn
what?
To...
Absolutely, Walt. That's a really astute observation. This is very much an entrepreneurial field.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be a freelancer, most likely. And so you need a go-getter attitude. You know, you're going to need to go out. You need some social skills, you know,
right.
because you're going to have to go approach clients, work with a lot of different people in a lot of different capacities.
You got management skills too.
Yeah, you got to have
skills, organizational skills, exactly. Not just artistic skills.
There's a business side. You got to be both artist and businessman in this, or business person in this field.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, Chris, you know what? I think we're running
over.
Yeah,
we are running out of time. I just wanted to so Life, do you think that the students that are entering the program, I mean, you know, as an instructor, I get often asked, well, what are these students going to end up with? I mean, and I always say, well, you know what? I mean, because even back when I was going to school, you know, I was thinking about either becoming a lawyer or whatever, and people would say, oh, well, there's lots of lawyers out there. There's lots of whatever out there. And my response to people who say, well, there's lots of artists out there already, well, if you're good enough and if you have enough drive, you're going to make it, right? Because
yeah.
It's with like every other, you know, profession out there.
Yep.
There's lots of everybody who's entering that profession. And do you find it's the same thing?
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, I mean, I don't want to sell it or oversell it, but that concept you hear so much about today, the creative economy, it's the real deal. And, you know, being entrepreneurial, innovative, understanding how to use modern technology and apply your creativity to it, there are a ton of opportunities for people like that. So
yeah, you're absolutely right. And just quickly, it's not about who can draw the best or who can design the best.
No.
It is about the whole
skill set,
yeah,
absolutely,
of creativity and stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. Life, thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Guys, it was a huge pleasure.
All right. Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For comments, suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com or getthepointradio.com. Click on the podcast link and enter your comments in the comments field.
And just remember, when it comes to comics, number ones are great, but just don't step in number two.
Oh, and please, please go out and support your local comic book store.